The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
We're going to start with a look at what's going on in the papers, and we're joined by Lisa Hand, journalist. Lisa, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, Tom. Great.
And Barry Kenny, head of corporate communications at Unroad Éireann. Barry, how are you today?
Good, Tom. Good morning.
Very good. I have to always say, Barry, you, I did work in CIE.
Yes, you were up in Inchicore Works, I think, were you?
Yeah, and actually, I was in the offices on Cunningham Road, which really are kind of abandoned now.
Right.
But I did meet the two Cyrils.
Oh, yes.
You started your life under Cyril Ferris.
That's right. Cyril was my mentor, the late, great Cyril Ferris. He was the head of PR for Unroad Éireann, and Cyril McIntyre in Bus Éireann.
But they were in the same office.
They were. They were indeed. Absolutely legends.
So if you rang them and they said Cyril, you'd say, which Cyril is it?
Pretty distinctive, I would have thought, on the phone, both of them, you know, and certainly in person as well.
In person, one big man.
Yeah, great. Really, really helpful to me at the start of my career as well.
I have to say, legendary. When I hear the radio, I always think of that.
I'm just delighted to hear that.
What I would say to you at this point, at this remove. We're going to start with the presidential race because it's really heating up at the moment. Mairead McGuinness, she's in there. But if there was an election tomorrow, a candidate called None of These would romp home. That's not a great indication,
no,
is it?
No, I think that it's finally beginning to kick off, and it's been remarkably slow. I mean, I've covered the last two campaigns thoroughly and from the get-go, and I have distinct memories of basically pursuing various hopefuls around the Bloom Festival, you know, which, you know, was last month. So which seemed to, I always seem to associate with the sort of kickoff of it. So it's been very slow to start. Now we have a few people begin to pop their head over the parapet. The first of what I imagine will be many polls between now and the end of October, you know, indicates that Mairead McGuinness, Fine Gael's Mairead McGuinness, is in the lead. But as you rightly say, Tom, it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty still wishy-washy lead. She's followed in second place by a little way behind by independent Catherine Connolly. But there's general, as you rightly say, it's apathy still reigns. And I think people at this stage are thinking about the holidays. They're just, you know, they're kind of plugged out. The dole has recessed for the summer. They're sort of plugging out of politics and they're like, don't be coming at me now with this stuff until September. So while, yes, there is a poll and there are some people beginning to shape up, I think the public really will. It'll be some time before the public really starts engaging.
The end of August, isn't it, really? When you get your holidays out of the way and the kids are going back to school, you start thinking.
Then you start thinking about it. And I suspect at that point there will be far more candidates in the field. Some are already names swirling around, but there'll always be a few people that'll jump in at the last minute. And then it'll turn into, I imagine, the same as the last two times, which is just a madcap, bananas, personality contest, mud throwing, skeletons falling out of the cupboards left, right and centre, and we'll all be off to the races then.
Just by the way, I wouldn't like to suggest that I haven't been paying, you know, riveting attention to all of this, but who else is in there at the moment? Who else has thrown their name
in
there?
Not really. You see, this is that there's names swirling around. I suppose the most intriguing one is Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald, who at the beginning of the year, when she was asked the question, she was like, no, never.
You can't throw your hat in too early.
Exactly. And the last time she was asked this question, last week or the week before, the answer was less equivocal. I think it was last weekend. And, you know, even when she did a doorstep with, you know, sort of an impromptu media huddle, again, she was there was still equivocation there. And Mary Lou MacDonald is not a woman to equivocate.
No. You know, is she actually in at the moment, though?
No, she's
all
not.
Right.
So the potential names are, you know, in the mix.
So some of these are potentials.
Oh, there's a load of potentials. And some of them will just, you know.
I'm losing interest for the second.
Yeah,
bloody potentials.
But like, what I think what Lisa's saying is that it did start so early. And I think the entire, in previous years, and the entire political system has taken that as a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
In that the brutality of it and the absolute scrutiny. I mean, I think you always had a pretty early declared candidate. I think David Norris, for example, two times ago, I think he probably declared like in February or March that he intended. You had Michael D. Higgins obviously kind of signalling his intention to run again, and various other people just kind of straining at the bit and creating noise around themselves. Even the idea of the council nominations, it's probably 2-3 elections ago that that really kind of almost came into the public consciousness. So I think everybody's kind of holding back from it. Nobody wants to do this early run. And what's happening and why I think the public aren't engaged yet is it's kind of all internal party machinations, who we put up, you know, kind of little kind of, you know, backroom discussions at this point. So the two candidates, I mean, Mairead McGuinness 14%, Catherine Connolly 9%, and either none of the above, or I haven't really thought about it, is 38% right now.
Yeah, and Catherine Connolly's already getting some of the skeletons in the closet treatment, isn't she?
Yeah,
she
absolutely. Is. And, you know, you have a couple of pieces there that she nominated Gemma O'Doherty for her tilt at the Oris last time out. And it's a little bit of a, you know, I backed her, but I didn't support her. Type piece, which doesn't really wash when she had kind of come out at that point.
It's a foretaste, though.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's an early indication of just how horrible it gets.
Well, it gets really rough, Tom. And, you know, I think that goes back to the nature of the actual job, because really what you did politically isn't a massive indicator of whether you make a good president or not. It really, it's a personality contest at the end of the day, because it's not that it's a symbolic role. I mean, the president doesn't have a huge amount of constitutional political, no political power and very little constitutional power. But you want someone in there that isn't going to disgrace you when you send them abroad, that, you know, will know what to do and the right knife and fork to use and not start any diplomatic, you know.
I think that is actually the first consideration.
The knife and fork.
Almost. I think there is a right, well, will they make a holy show of us? Kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's the bar is, that's really the bar. Yeah. Don't make a holy show of us when we send you abroad. Yeah. So, and, you know, Michael Dee was such a sort of, you know, he was a character, you know, he was this sort of colourful character. You know, he was a poet. You could send him abroad without any fear that he would. And also, I mean, the calibre of the two that came before him as well. I mean, first, you know, female President Mary Robinson, followed by two terms with Mary McAleese, who were impeccable in the role.
Totally. Yeah.
So, you know,
they're all big boots to step into, aren't they?
They are. And you will get the sort of joke candidates and the novelty candidates, right? You know, the chances are that you will get a few names. But at the end of the day, when the citizen goes in to vote, they are doing who won't make a holy show of us.
Absolutely.
So
there is the potential, I suppose, for a few more.
Front room.
There's a potential for a few more through the political parties, because they are so disparate. You know what I mean? You've got like Sinn Féin could put a candidate up themselves. Labour Plus, if they decided not to back Catherine Connolly, could put up another candidate. Obviously, you've got the group to have as well. So through the TD system, you know, you could have five odd candidates coming out.
Yeah, see anyone colourful? Do you see anyone colourful at all you'd like to see in there? Eamon Dunphy wouldn't go for it. No.
Who?
Eamon Dunphy.
I don't think he'll go for it. Why would he be bothered? He has a great life. Why would you want to be doing that now?
Jimi Hendrix impression.
Well, this is true. But I mean, it's
a good president, not a great president.
Imagine that critique applied.
It's a great thought. Somebody should put it to
you're a good president. You're not a great president.
Chances are somebody would probably put it to him this very day.
If you're listening, Eamon.
Do phone in.
You need a bit of colour. No better, Matt. All right, very good. So they aren't even under starters orders, really, are they?
No, it's the phony war. It's before the tanks roll in over the border, really. You know, we really are, and I think it will remain a largely speculative, really, until I think early September, because obviously the later people go in, the less time that they have to be savaged by the media and social media. And
some people are
currently
checking their skulls. I'd say am I willing to reveal?
There'd be a head count of skulls going on in some places now, you know.
Does my current wife need to know this about me?
Precisely.
I've gotten this far down the road.
Exactly. So,
But then it is belting entertainment when it gets
absolutely brilliant.
It is. It always is. And the presidential debates are always really
wonderful.
Fascinating.
And we've years till another election after this, by the way. So, you know, we best enjoy it.
That's it. Exactly.
Make the most of it.
Yeah.
Right. In more serious news of local property tax bills being set to rise for Dubliners, I have to say this really annoys me. I was very, when property taxes were brought in during the dark days of the IMF, I remember people saying, oh, it's one of those things, they bring them in and then you have them forever.
Right.
And they only ever go up.
Right.
And here we are. All of that is true.
I find myself split on this, in that there's two factors that are going to push it up in Dublin. One is the revaluation, which is going to take place. And two is, under the previous council, the majority of the council backed a 15% reduction, which the council has the discretion to do. Each council does. And that impacted the city council's ability to deliver services. So I always found, you know what I mean, it's one of these, and obviously the kind of greater the value of the property they have, the more it impacts. So it is a kind of progressive levy in that regard. So I if the city council is in a position to deliver better services, that is a great thing. But what has been on the other side of the line is it's by definition, by house values, it does impact Dubliners and sorry, the rest of the country that doesn't have a whole lot of sympathy in this regard. But it does hit those of us living in Dublin significantly more than other parts of the country. So the double whammy, I think, if you'd asked me, do you have a problem with them taking off the 15% reduction? I would have said no to deliver the services. But as I say, I always come back to the basic structure of the property tax on house values means that Dubliners are always going to be paying more, and, you know, against a general kind of backdrop where things cost a lot more anyway.
And it could be one house with two earners in it, high earners perhaps.
Yeah.
And a house next door with somebody who isn't earning much money.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what I mean? This is the kind of, in a way, it's a nature of a type of a wealth tax, you know what I mean? That's on the asset. People are probably going to get quite, I think, a sting by this because it is going to jump, and it feels like, you know, particularly I think the valuations last time, I won't say they were gamed, but it felt like there was a little bit that they were kind of artificially kind of set, whereas they are going up plus the 15%. So that is going to sting.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see how the government handle this as well, because if you look back to, say, something like the water charges or the original household tax before... That turned into a mess before it was literally handed over to revenue. And I think they might have learned a lesson from the massive furore around the water charges. If you're going to levy something like this, it's really important to show very clearly the benefits of it. So this is the streets that have been cleaned up. These are the extra guards we're putting in here. These are the extra amenities that are provided directly from this revenue, right? They say they can raise 15, 16 million extra. If there are tangible and visible improvements from that, that's the way to, you know, possibly to actually, it's still going to be annoyance about it, but people are less annoyed if they can look at something and go, that's there because of the property tax or whatever. They didn't learn that lesson on previous outings when they tried to levy charges. So it'd be interesting to see if they've upped their game a bit and they realise that, you know, that is actually
isn't it though a bit
around.
Hard to take to see those bills going off when at the same time in the same papers you're reading about the proceeds of the Apple tax and it's 20 billion and makes more in interest than all of these charges put together. Is it not just very galling to think that somebody living in a house maybe retired has to have that bill coming towards them when those levels of finance are swishing around?
Well, this again, I mean, the Apple tax, I mean, this is such a long running saga. I mean, this, the Apple tax has been going on.
The money we don't want.
I think a lot of
the money
people,
your uncle slipped to you on his way out of the house that you're too embarrassed to spend.
Yeah, you were like, no, we could take
I was never embarrassed to spend that.
Exactly.
He gave you 20 billion.
I mean, sort of, I know, I always thought, you know, it was always one of those stories where, you know, the Irish government run away going, no, you know, nothing to do with us, boss. Take this, we don't want this money. I'm grand, you're all right there. And then the money sort of rested in their account for so long while they still fought it through the courts, went to escrow.
Perfect outcome, kind of, you know, didn't fall out with Apple, got the cash in the end, you know.
We played to our strengths.
Yeah, completely, you know. So
absolutely did. So totally danced between the raindrops on that one. So, you know, it'll be massively interesting when the Taoiseach and Tánaiste are having a big powwow to sit down and divvy, you know, probably fire up a Google spreadsheet and figure out what to spend the money on, where, on what. And again, I think it will be, this is all about, everyone's going to be lining up with their hand out. I mean, it's going to be, it's almost like the sort of budget all over again. I mean, everybody will be lined up going, we need this, we need that. But if they come out with a decent revised NDP, National Development Plan, that actually goes, we are going to fix the rackety water system. We are going to put money into, you know, into the public housing with a lot of defective concrete. We are going to buy a few planes and boats to, you know, to save our defence forces blushes, you know, with like God love them all, you know. I mean, it's like...
You already sound like you need an awful lot more than 20 billion.
Oh, totally.
Tom, I'm going to shock you now. Yeah. I think capital investment in public transport would be a wonderful idea.
I didn't want to say it in front of you, Barry, but there was... A route out towards the airport going through my mind.
There you are, you know. So there's
it'll be a once in a lifetime chance to actually get it.
Well, look, what we have there is, I mean, the five kind of capital spending areas, you know, are housing, transport, kind of the services, infrastructure, health and defence. And the housing, transport and services come together because if we don't have the type of kind of water supply, electricity supply and public transport links, there he said it, you know what I mean, to support the housing development. They really do align together. And it is the type of thing that then can, if it's there now and can be activated quickly, you come back to what Lise was saying about the property tax, you know, demonstrating benefit.
It's win-win, what Barry's saying, because you put the metro into the airport, all those property prices go up on the way to the airport, their LPT goes up. It's a virtuous circle for the government.
And of course, the existing heavy rail system as well. There's enhancements that we can make there as well. So in terms of for things, and I agree totally with Lise in terms of like defence, it's an opportunity to actually kind of start to get a bit serious about some. You know, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Just hope no one hits you. That's
the strategy. Yeah.
So we're under a legal obligation to mention Donald Trump once an hour station.
Yes. But of course.
There's two things about him at the moment. The Maxwell thing isn't going away for him, which is amazing.
I mean, I'll tell you something. I'm currently, you know, how I spend a lot of my day is actually immersed in right-wing podcasts, US right-wing podcasts.
Gosh.
And I am, and how I'm still semi-sane is beyond me. But I have genuinely been taken aback and by two things. I'd say two things about this. A, the level of vitriol, the pushback, the hostility that his loyal MAGA base have unleashed on him and his administration over the whole Epstein files, the releasing of them. And I cannot overstate how key and core this whole conspiracy belief that the entirety of the US government is infiltrated by a massive, wide-ranging elite network of pedophiles who are trafficking children. Like, this is it's the core belief. It's a core belief of MAGA. It's one of their main faiths. It's the entire reasoning behind the setting up of that sort of the breakaway conspiracy theorists, QAnon.
Yeah.
It is embedded in their in everything they believe. And they believe that Donald Trump was elected for the first time to clean to drain the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about that. And that he was brought back then the second time to really do the job. And the sense of betrayal that they feel because he is now not only turned around and said nothing to see here and move on, but berated them and actually turned on them and, you know, and called them weak and stupid. And I mean, it's actually extraordinary. So it is absolutely not going away. Mm. It really isn't. Now you do. And it's the Streisand effect all over again. I mean, it really is. It's the more you tell, you know, you tell people
nothing to see here, folks. This,
nothing to see here.
Yeah.
But it really is the first time that his base have felt really, really, really let down by their hero. Like, this is not just their president. He's a cult figure. He's the leader of their cult.
I just don't get how they, you know, the infamous video clip where you can see he's in Epstein's ear and you can see he's trying to impress Epstein. Epstein's kind of almost there impassive and Donald's kind of, look at me,
tell him a joke.
Yeah, look at the things I'm saying or whatever. And that they have for so long been able to get past that in their consideration
the latest twist where he is now, the president has launched a massive lawsuit in a Florida court looking for $10 billion against Rupert Murdoch because one of his papers, The Wall Street Journal, printed yesterday what they say is a contributory drawing stroke letter that would imply a closer relationship. That is going to be massively important because so far the US media giants have crumbled before him. NBC, CBS have given away when he has sued them. The News Corp have come out and said, we are fighting this to the absolute hilt.
Okay.
So now you have two of the most savage males ever to dominate like the media landscape. now pitting themselves. You know, one is 94 and the other is turning 80.
Will we ever not be talking about Trump? It's unbelievable.
I don't think there's ever been a more dominant figure in the kind of public discourse. When you consider, you know, all we know now, the information that's out there, all the sources, you know, people say, oh, mainstream media, and you can get opposite views and you can get everything. But he permeates everything. From this to what's in Coke cans.
What's in Coke?
You know what absolutely. I mean? Yeah, Coke cans, not what's in Coke.
Sorry, yeah. I couldn't get over how many different ways they have of flavouring that.
Yes.
But listen, I'm running out of time and we all have to talk about the Coldplay Kiss Cam.
Yeah. Because
this is the most incredible story of all time. It really is. It's probably the biggest example of a story going around the world.
Like, yes.
Yeah. It's
wildfire.
It's extraordinary. I mean, I think what everybody is saying, what were they thinking?
Just in case anyone hasn't seen it, hiding in a cave, at a Coldplay gig, they have a thing called a kiss cam, which is a camera that goes to couples in the crowd. The couple are supposed to either kiss each other or not, because they'll cheer you or boo you, depending on how you react. This went to a couple who immediately dived out of the camera. And then Chris Martin, being a songwriter, calls what he sees. If it's yellow, he'll say it's yellow. And he said, oh, you know, they must be having an affair.
It turns out.
And all holy hell has broken loose. And, you know, this guy, Andy Byron, who's CEO of a artificial intelligence, though he's obviously lacking a bit of intelligence himself, but a company, you know, astronomy or whatever it's called, they're now saying that astronomical is probably more like what he's going to have to pay out of this if his wife takes exception to this. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. You've never seen such a thing implode.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally saw somebody's certainly, you know, happy or, you know, certainly domestic harmony literally disintegrate before your eyes. Yeah. I mean, it was quite extraordinary.
I mean, I don't know if you've been to Coldplay concerts, Tom, probably have a far better music taste, but he does a bit. This should not be surprising to you if you go to a Coldplay concert. And unless they were unfortunate enough to be the first people, you know, you're in a, it looks like they're in a corporate box.
Yeah.
They're exposed. They're out in the wild or whatever. Do you not think anyone says, maybe you just stand aside, you know, just kind of a bunch of colleagues here together at a concert.
You consciously uncouple if you're not supposed to be beside each other
in a field with 80,000 mobile phones.
Precisely.
We'll get away with this.
And again, they stay hugging. Yeah. Nothing happens. They stand beside each other. Nothing happens. They panic.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and here we are.
Everyone's eyes are
That was very close. It wasn't just a kind of arm around your colleague.
No. This was warm.
Very, very bad indeed. Yeah. Imagine the wife suddenly waking up to finding news that way.
But
for
the
a
planet
start.
Is talking about your wife.
If they have children, the incredible pressure.
I mean, that's it. I mean, page six, the big sort of very powerful gossip column in the New York Post, they were reporting that, you know, she immediately went on to Facebook and
changed her surname
and then deleted her account. So
everything is lived in public.
This is it.
No one just thinks those things quietly. Yeah, their best friend, right?
I think I saw he kind of alluded to kind of holding Coldplay somewhat responsible and is this correct behaviour? I think we've all seen bit when you buy a ticket that says there'll be video recording, stuff gets recorded.
Also, Chris Martin, he went from, you know, spotting them to saying, what have we done?
Yeah.
I think you did it there, Chris. That was you. You were the one
who plays this game. Yes.
Are they having an affair? Holy moly. What a world do we live in.
It comes to show, really, the only thing that should ever be on the camera, like on a massive screen in a stadium, should be the words of the national anthem. End of story.
And again, we come back to, thank God these phones weren't around earlier on. Whatever.
You've no idea, Barry. Yes. Barry, thank you very much indeed. Barry Kenny, Head of Corporate Communications at Unreturn, and Lisa Hand, journalist and much more. Thank you both very much indeed.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.